You are listening to DBN, Demigod Broadcasting Network. And this is Exploring Olympus. Good afternoon. My name is Sister Winifred Frederica Dankworth Wren, and I will be your... Excuse me, and I will be your host for this part of this lecture series. We are broadcasting with a live studio audience from the historic Wankerton Hall, located in the breathtaking town of Burton-on-Newater, the Venice of the Coxwolds. Today's special guest lecture is one that I am proud to proclaim that I have avoided for many years, regretfully until today. A graduate of Oxford University, yes, a rather shocking fact for most of us, our guest has made numerous discoveries that were best left buried. For example, a previously unknown crypt discovered in the picturesque town of Versailles, Burgundy, dating back to 1400 AD, the resting place for Brother Baptiste Baudelaire Badou, a well-known and much-loved friar, who was secretly half-human, half-troll, and was known for his generosity to the downtrodden back-alley prostitutes, as he helped them find a new way of life and God. Unfortunately, due to Dr. Brackenridge's research, an overall meddlesome attitude, it was discovered that the friar was somewhat troubled due to his unhealthy sexual obsession with food, particularly when it came to cake. Records previously locked away at the Vatican showed the friar stole money from the donation box for the poor to pay for his habit of having busty women smash birthday cake on his naked body while he recited the rosary. The Catholic Church still hasn't recovered from this discovery. Our guest speaker went on to become a world-famous supernatural and demigod historian, hosted his own television series titled Let's Just See What We Can Discover, and has established himself as a social media influencer of what I do not know, and pet video posting aficionado, which is both pathetic and sad. It is my regret to present to you Dr. Sebastian Brackenridge as he enlightens us about Persephone and Hades.
Hello, Wankerton Hall! It's me! Thank you! Thank you! You're ever so kind! Thank you! Thank you! Thank you. Now, first I must thank our host, dear, kind, long-suffering, six packs of cigarettes a day, Sister Winnie. So glad I could pop your shriveled Brackenridge cherry. And bravo, Wankerton Hall, and your motivation to blow the dust off your programming. I mean, really, how many lectures can you have about how to steep a proper cup of tea, knit the perfect Advent scarf, or how fun it is to do underwater basket weaving? And as for you, dear chickens, hello! I guess I'm in for a penny, in for a pound with you lot. I was pretty sure my last lecture about Gorgons would have killed off any future opportunities to speak in front of my own mirror, let alone an audience. And yet here we are. Isn't it simply delicious? You know, when Sister Winnie called me, I said to her, "Oh, Winnie, I can hear the pain in your voice. This must be agony for you to ask me to speak. I'll do it." The slamming of Sister Winnie's hardwired rotary phone was a music to my ears. I was terrified to ask her if she wanted to carpool to the hall together. So let's get to it. And hopefully this lecture will be outrageous enough that I can finally drift into very, very early retirement. Judging by the clicking sound of Sister Winnie's rosary beads, I'm not the only one wanting my very, very early retirement. I would like to start this lecture by setting the bar rather low. And if anyone happens to be going to the bar, get me a whiskey sour. I would be ever so grateful. The Olympians, those powerful deities who have fallen away since the Olympian Wars, which is something I'll cover in one of my following lectures, were nothing more than selfish little whores. Yes, you heard me correctly, chickens, and please note that I'm being as generous as I can be. The legends of the Olympians are littered with their sexual exploits. If something had a pulse and stood still for 3 seconds, you can be sure an Olympian were humping or mounting it. And those were just the female gods. And I think there was a big asterisk on that, if it had a pulse. They were sexually charged sprinklers, shooting out their seeds into the world as a multitude of demigods sprouted into existence, all because of their inability to pull out before completion. When asked to wear a condom, Zeus, the biggest slut of them all, as proven by the writing on the bathroom walls of Mount Olympus, would reply, "I'm not a filthy sailor or over-the-road trucker. Besides, I practice the hope for the best method." Not that he really cared. Ever try to serve an Olympian with a court summons for child support? Let's just say there isn't a P.O. box. Zeus was the perfect example of what the Olympians were really like. He would stop at nothing to scratch that certain itch, which I tend to believe was a terminal case of crabs. Zeus would even lower himself into transforming into an animal to seduce a woman. Try and wrap your head around that. The animals were as follows: the cuckoo, when he ravished Hera; a swan, when he ravished Leta; a bull, when he carried off Europa; and of course, how can we forget Eurymedusa, whom he seduced her by transforming into an ant? I mean, really, don't get me wrong, the whole bull thing is, in a twisted, kind of kinky way, was certainly understandable. But an ant? Talk about having an itchy Susie, micropenis be damned! This, of course, proves how completely and utterly disgusting the Olympians were. Although not as disgusting as Pandora's box. Allow me to set the record straight. Out of all of the things Pandora let out of her box, the worst had to be herpes and the sneaky chlamydia. Summer's Eve did nothing to clean up that woman's mess. Of course, there were exceptions. Some goddesses preferred to be chaste and were always the first to flash their promise rings at keg parties, as they disapprovingly judged everyone. Those goddesses were the Beckys, Madisons, Karens, Jennifers, and Melissas of the world. And don't you dare judge me! You too despise those girls who sit in their tight groups in the hall outside of the cafeteria, offering cookies and a flyer for their weekly chastity meeting. And truth be told, everyone knows the Melissas of the world still believe oral and anal do not disqualify their promise ring's promise. Please! If that were the case, I would have a promise ring crown, scepter, necklace, and a 15.8 diamond solitaire promise ring for everyone to kiss. But beyond the frigid and judgmental, the whores and the leches. You will find Mount Olympus's power couple, Persephone and Hades, two people who are polar opposites. So I ask you, how is it possible ebony and ivory found perfect harmony? Well, listen closely, chickens, and you will learn how the original odd couple became one, against all odds. So, allow me to set the stage. Hades is the god of the dead and the king of the underworld. Talk about a Debbie Downer at parties. I mean, how would you introduce him to anyone? All right, so there was this one time. I was invited to this dinner party, and Hades happened to be there. He walked up to me and a friend of mine, Joan, so I did what anyone else would do. I said, Joan, let me introduce you to Hades, god of the underworld. Hades, this is Joan. She sells Tupperware and Avon. As they were shaking hands and saying what a pleasure it is to meet each other, Hades gets this look in his eyes and says to Joan, sorry about your mother, whom the last time Joan checked was very much alive. Suddenly, Joan's cell phone rings. I know, so terribly wrong. However, it was a lovely funeral. In lieu of gifts, I sent a donation to the Death by Golf Ball Foundation. Now, Hades was an incredibly stern ruler. No birthday cake in the break room. And the turnover in the underworld's human resources department was horrendous. Because of his micromanagement, Hades rarely left the underworld. I'm all for a man who works hard because Mama needs a new pair of Christian Louboutins. But Hades, working girl, you've got the front office. Time to let your hair down and leave Staten Island. As you might have guessed, Hades was incredibly lonely and very bitter. Although he did find comfort with his three-headed dog named Cerberus, which, strangely enough, he had picked up from a no-kill shelter, even though the creature had been declared unadoptable. Dear chickens, follow Hades' example and adopt from shelters and rescue organizations, please. The other part of this odd couple was Persephone, goddess of spring. Stunningly beautiful, she was the embodiment of rebirth and light. Now, before we all start hating on poor Safi, that was her nickname, we have to understand the following. One, everywhere Persephone went, she was followed by countless Olympian suitors, all vying for her attention in hopes of capturing her heart. I know, she does sound like a total Rachel, but she truthfully wasn't aware of it. She had been raised to be humble and channel all of her vanity and ego into her work for spring. I mean, you don't really believe all of those gorgeous flowers pop out of the ground on their own. Also, Persephone was mentally fragile and, well, sixpence short of a shilling, if you know what I mean. Not all there. And she had the worst taste in men. Total bad boy complex, which I don't blame her. But her mother, Demeter, was a completely different story, and Persephone was working her mother's last good nerve. So, one time, Demeter caught Safi having a bit of a snogfest with a boy behind the Mount Olympus football field's bleachers, when Safi was supposed to be at one of those promise ring purity meetings. Furious with her daughter, Demeter yanked Safi out of school. And this was the year our glee club was supposed to go to sectionals. Fat chance of that without Persephone. At this point, Safi's life became a living hell, as her mother became more determined to keep her daughter a virgin. You see, Demeter was the goddess of agriculture, fertility, sacred law, and the harvest. But she put a lot of emphasis on the sacred law sort of thing. Or at the very least, the sacredness of her daughter's hymen. I know, I'm nauseous at the thought of it too, chickens. Think Stephen King's Carrie White's mother screaming at her daughter, they're all gonna laugh at you! They're all gonna laugh at you! So there was no canoodling on the couch, hand checks in front of the TV set, or frantic gropings at the drive-in for Persephone and her dirty pillows. It was complete lockdown, so much so that Demeter removed Persephone from the court on Mount Olympus to ensure her daughter would remain intact. So, now you're wondering, Dr. Brackenridge, world-famous demigod and supernatural historian, Olympic gold medal recipient of the Tea Time 11Zs and I'll Play Mother Long program, how could these two meet? He's locked away in the underworld, and she's practically chained to her mother's cankles. How? Well, chickens, this is how it happened. Picture it. Sicily, 1932. Oh, damn it, sorry. Dear hearts, I've been watching the Golden Girls marathon. It was more like Sicily before it was Sicily. Right after Zeus, Hades, and Poseidon vanquished the Titans, when Hades was given complete dominion over the underworld. But there was more to the underworld than wailing, plaids with stripes, and track lighting. The underworld also served as a prison for undesirables, like that uncle who hugs you a little bit too long, the bag boy who manages to smush your bread, and of course that one friend, that no matter what the horrible experience you've just lived through, is something they've not only experienced, but it was much worse because they broke every bone in their body. Thanks to WebMD, Carolyn is now convinced she suffers from Sparrow's disease. You know, hollow bones and needs to talk about it 24/7, 365. Well, give it a rest, Carolyn. You're just bloody clumsy and batshit crazy. But I digress. No one was more undesirable than the Titan Typhon, the father of all monsters, a dragon with 100 heads that apparently never slept. Hello, ever try melatonin, Benadryl, Xanax, Valium, Ativan? Well, anyway, he was imprisoned underneath Mount Etna, which led to some major issues when you consider Typhon was also the god of volcanoes and geysers and their eruptions. So while Typhon raged in his prison, the danger of a major eruption of Mount Etna grew increasingly inevitable. Now, from what I understand, dating back to 396 BC, there have always been eruptions from Mount Etna, which I believe could have been avoided if someone would have just thrown a bottle of Tums into the mouth of the volcano. Seeing the potential for a catastrophe, it was suggested that the eruption could split the earth in two, thereby setting everyone free from the underworld. Hades summoned his seven black horses and his black chariot, which was made from nightmares, smoke, children's tears, and Elmer's glue. Thanks, Elsie! Hades raced to the surface of the earth to determine how bad things were going to get. Side note, obviously the earth did not split in two, and what was believed to be a complete rupturing of the planet was nothing more than an ingrown hair in need of popping. Oh, stop. We all watch those YouTube videos from Dr. Pimple Popper. So, while all this was going on, because believe it or not everything revolves around you, Hades, Persephone and her battle axe of a mother was tending to the earth. Persephone was busy painting flowers with colors that were sure to make people think they had just dropped acid. She was going for a whole 1960s retro feel. While her mother prepared herself for the duties regarding harvesting and was redlining various sacred laws that she found to be too lenient. I guess stoning a person to death was too nurturing for the daft cow. Demeter knew she needed to leave her daughter's side to do her rituals around harvesting, while also hosting a Zoom meeting to present her PowerPoint presentation on how, as deities, the Olympians needed to set a better example. That's rich coming from her. You'll figure out why later, why this is just so hysterical. She was reluctant to do so because she had a bad feeling that I like to refer to as nutter butter crazy cuckoo. When she could not postpone her harvest duties anymore, Demeter departed from her daughter, leaving her under the watchful eye of the sea nymphs. Now I have to stop here and ask, who in their right mind would leave their daughter under the protection of sea nymphs? Well, I am sure some nymphs are very respectable, but even their name, nymph, pretty much tells you all you need to know. Anyone heard of Nympho or Nymphomaniac? Talk about bad choices, Demeter. So Demeter left her virginal daughter with the nymphs, which included Persephone's best friend, Cyon. As the girls sat there, ate grilled cheeses, combed each other's hair, and talked about the latest tiger beat. Meanwhile, relaxing on what I assumed to be a down-filled fainting couch in the shape of a swan. I know, dear audience, 1890 is calling and they want their couch back. Well, there lay Aphrodite, the goddess of love, with her son, Eros, the god of both love and sex. Eros was feeding Aphrodite grapes, because I guess that's what you do when you're bored out of your mind. Aphrodite had watched 10 Hallmark Channel Christmas movies in a row, and even the goddess of love couldn't take much more of it. It was then that something caught Aphrodite's attention. She glanced to the earth, and she sees two amazing things. Persephone isn't with her gutter snipe of a mother, and Hades is on earth, outside of the underworld. Now, side note, there are several things that irritate Olympians. Being ignored, being told no, being made to feel insignificant, and finally, not being sat at the finest table in restaurants, even though they don't have a reservation. So consider young, virginal, bleh, Persephone, guarded by her mother, the she-beast, going down a path where love isn't necessary, because Demeter believes no one is good enough for her daughter, and she intends her daughter to remain untouched, like the frigid old maids Athena and Artemis, i.e. Persephone checking off all of those points I've mentioned before, except for the restaurant thing. Not good at all. Then there is Hades, who holds dominion over the underworld, a world that exists without love. Love is for the heavens and earth, but not for the dead. He has the same strikes against him in Aphrodite's burn book. Yes, she's a total mean girl. And yet, there they were, nearly kissing distance from each other. A once-in-a-several-millennium opportunity. And Aphrodite wasn't going to pass up this opportunity. So she tells her son Eros to auto-start her vintage French Le Car, and they both drive down back to Earth, naturally avoiding any toll roads and using Waze to avoid any speed traps. While Aphrodite drives, because having Eros on her insurance would be ridiculously expensive, Eros searches through his archery quiver and selects his sharpest and strongest love arrow for Hades. Upon arriving, Eros finds the perfect sniper position in a large mastic tree, and Aphrodite materializes a few steps away from Hades, acting surprised to see him. They walk and they talk about the weather, the price of frankincense and essential oils, when the two come upon Persephone and the sea nymph. And while Aphrodite tells Hades who the young maiden is, she says the trigger phrase, "Hades, do you ever feel not so fresh?" And Eros shoots his arrow into Hades, a direct hit into the god's black heart. Now, Eros's arrows are painless, but are very effective, as love begins to surge into Hades' heart. And whom should he be looking at the time of impact? Persephone. Hades falls hard, unable to fight the power of Eros's magic. And the magical scent of Aphrodite's perfume, a mixture of Ginette after bath splash, and two dabs of Forever Crystal from the Dynasty collection of fragrances. I mean, we are talking about Ryan Gosling, Rachel McAdams, Notebook hard, with a huge dash of I Can't Quit You a la Brokeback Mountain. He knows he must capture Persephone's heart, and who just happens to be right beside him but the goddess of love? And together, they hatch a plan. So, with the help of Eros, the sea nymphs were distracted. Please! If I would have been there, I would have been happy to tell him all he needed to do was get a laser pointer and a new cutout of Henry Cavill. I would have loved one of those myself. But distracted they were, as Persephone was led in the opposite direction with a trail of Reese's Pieces. No, sorry, no, that's not right. That's E.T. Well, let's just say by some glitter, a Virginia ham, and of course a mysterious tune carried on the breeze, calling to her as she followed it into a wooden glen far away from the distracted nymphs. Now, this glen was incredible. It started out with a red carpet, where reporters asked Persephone who she was wearing, to which she said, "It's vintage Gorgon couture." The fans went wild in the stands as Persephone was ushered into the clearing, where thousands of twinkling lights strung from trees and these gorgeous white Chinese lanterns floated in midair. And wouldn't you know it, on a white clam-shaped stage, with a full philharmonic orchestra, dressed in a golden gown was Aphrodite, and a cast of nearly 200 equity actors she had hired. The choreography was a sight to behold, as Aphrodite sung Taylor Swift's You Belong to Me. Of course, I personally believe she was lip-syncing. And right in the middle of the dancers stood Hades, looking every inch the Abercrombie model with messy curly blonde hair, barefoot in linen pants and a tight-fitting white shirt. I would have died! Swoon, dear chicken, swoon! He looked like Chris Hemsworth, except better, with a whole bad boy air to him. Who doesn't love a man with a sleeve tattoo peeking out from his rolled-up sleeves? Well, you've guessed it. Persephone was a goner. From the moment she looked into his eyes, saw his quirky smile, and she fell hard as Hades kissed her with such tenderness and love that Aphrodite herself swooned and had to be brought back with smelling salts. Suddenly, the ground in the glen rumbled and split open as Hades' chariot and the team of seven black horses burst through, and with the confidence she never knew she had, Persephone grabbed Hades' hand, pulling him into a run as the two of them jumped onto his chariot. And off they rode towards the underworld. Once they were gone, the ground closed up, leaving a very strange flower where the earth had cracked open. All of the dancers gasped at the smell coming from the flower. And yes, chickens, that's how the corpse lily was created. As for Aphrodite, she sniffed, wrinkled her nose, and rolled her eyes while muttering, "L'amour, l'amour, l'amour." And she and Eros went off to the mall to do some retail therapy and possibly have a nosh at the Olive Garden. Naturally, she expected a seat by the window. Seconds later, Cyan, the water nymph, calls for Persephone. Apparently, the Henry Cavill cutout fell into the bay and the laser pointer died. Old batteries, I guess. Persephone was nowhere to be found. Frantic to find her, the nymphs searched far and wide, and they stumbled into the clearing and found the corpse lily. And after several bouts of nausea and vomiting, Cyan realizes what has happened. And trust me, chickens, it's really a disgusting-smelling flower. So the grief overwhelms her, and Cyan melts away with her tears and forms the Cyan River. Can anyone say overplayed? Yes, a bit on the dramatic side, but Cyan always had to make everything about herself. Demeter, finished with her harvest duties, you know, square dancing, charades, and making corn husk dolls, calls for her daughter and the nymphs, and receives no answer. Assuming Persephone is being distracted by the nymphs and their synchronized swimming routine, Demeter looks for them in the bay and eventually follows the trail of glitter and bits of half-eaten Virginia ham, which lead her to the clearing and the newly formed Cyan River with the corpse lily growing by its banks. Instantly, don't ask me how, Demeter realizes her daughter was taken by Hades, and after taking her cue from Medea's Diary of a Black Woman playbook, she begins to unravel into madness and mourning, Her first act was to gather all of the sea nymphs, including a bucket of water, to represent Sion, and curse them, thereby transforming the scared, cowering nymphs into sirens, damned to never experience love, as their siren song would only lead men to their deaths in the sea. Bloody hell is right, chickens. Demeter does not suffer fools. So weeks go on by, and Demeter continues her one-woman show, Munchausen Syndrome, the musical. She has stopped doing anything related to fertility or harvest, as vegetation, animals, and humans wither away, starve, and die. It's all about me, me, me with her. Forget about the poor people who could give a flying fig about her sorrows and only want to live to see another day. Meanwhile, Hades has spent the last few weeks transforming the underworld into a paradise for Persephone. We are talking about only the best of everything. Once dead soil and rock has been transformed into lush landscapes with the help of Persephone and her talented painting artistry. Nothing is off the table for Hades to prove his love is sincere, and Persephone, who was only allowed to have the attention of her mother, is deliriously happy because now she has an entire world of people, albeit dead, fawning over her, and a man whom she loves dearly. Case in point, originally Hades had this massive castle that was so terrifying to look at it would turn your hair white. And don't bother asking, you might be worth it, but L'Oreal Paris won't fix that color. But Persephone didn't care for it, and thanks to Heron, the ferryman responsible for ferrying the dead into the underworld, she now had in possession numerous catalogs from Restoration Hardware and Pottery Barn, along with a huge stack of post-it notes. The results were dramatic. Gone went the dreary castle, or as Persephone called it, Hattie, her nickname for Hades, bachelor pad, with its pleather furniture and dumpster-diving decorating. And up went an adorable beach house on a black sand beach overlooking the River Styx, with a patio, barbecue, volleyball net, and in-ground pool. Swimming with catalog chic, the interior was decorated within an inch of its life, leaving both Hattie and Safi very happy. However, on Mount Olympus, Zeus brooded. Demeter was lying waste to the earth in her constant show of agony, which she completely made sure was within sight of her ex-lover Zeus. Who was her brother? I know! Sacred law my ass! This is Jerry Springer, V.C. Andrews kind of messed up shite. And Zeus was Persephone's father, which definitely explains why Persephone wasn't quite right. But what could he do? His brother Hades was happy, and he did have complete dominion over the underworld. I mean, there's only so much you can take of a gloomy, brooding brother at a family reunion. It's bad enough Poseidon had that fish stench, which as long as you stood upwind from him, it wasn't that bad. But Hades was always such a drag, dressed all in black, growling about how much more delicious the food of the dead was, and that he was sure it was going to rain, and that everyone should be wearing sunscreen. But Zeus couldn't let Demeter continue her rampage. He summoned Hades to his side, and after a heated discussion, both gods agreed to a plan where no one got everything they wanted, but at the very least, everyone got something. This, of course, depended on Persephone. Back in the underworld, things happened quickly. A full royal court was assembled on the black sand beach. Everyone had gotten rid of their velvets and confining courtier's clothes for casual Martha's Vineyard wear. The scene looked like a Merchant Ivory set. Persephone, dressed in a flowing gown of white and gold and a wreath of flowers on her head, stood before the court as Hades got down on one knee and asked Persephone to marry him. He gave her a box that held a 5.6-carat Harry Winston black diamond engagement ring, along with several pomegranate seeds. Understanding what the ring and the seeds represented, love everlasting, and a one-way ticket away from her mother, Persephone said yes, and Hades placed the ring on her finger while she ate the pomegranate seeds. Once the seeds were gone, a lightning strike came out of the inky black sky of the underworld, and Demeter and Zeus appeared in Zeus's chariot. Demeter immediately walked over to her daughter and grasped her arm, demanding Hades release her daughter. And for several minutes, Demeter and Hades argued about what was to be done. Zeus smiled at his daughter, niece, hushed Hades and Demeter. "Have you eaten of the food of the underworld, my niece slash daughter?" Zeus asked. Persephone replied, "Father, uncle, yes, I have. I have eaten 6 pomegranate seeds." Demeter rushed over to her daughter and slapped her, crying, "Stupid girl," and acting like a Harrods perfume counter associate, pulling a double shift during the holiday season. Demeter knew that once someone living partakes of the food of the underworld, they are tethered to it. So, Zeus proposes a compromise, and because Persephone ate 6 seeds, she would split her time between the underworld with her husband, Hades, and the land of the living with Demeter. Demeter knew that was the best deal she could expect, and begrudgingly accepted it. Although, never to lose an opportunity to make a spectacle of herself at her daughter's wedding, she refused to eat any of the wedding cake, changed into a white pantsuit with an RBG descent collar, and bought the couple something not on the wedding registry list to spite Hades. The gift was a tanning bed. Talk about a passive-aggressive move, Demeter. She also went into her usual period of mourning, when her daughter wasn't around and spending time with, her husband, allowing the earth to grow cold and dormant, which is why we have the 4 seasons, as fall and winter represents the time when Persephone gets to return to the underworld and the hottie she calls Hades. And that's how these 2 crazy kids met, fell in love, and proved 2 major points. Love is love, and love always wins. I'm Dr. Sebastian Brackenridge. Let's see what we can discover next. Thank you.